This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. This conversation is a real treat. Unfortunately, we couldn't coordinate our schedules, so Joel is missing. But on the good side, Corey Cantaloupe is joining me as we were both at PowerCon, and we wanted to talk about our experience. If you're not familiar with the name, you are familiar with his work. He was a sculptor on Classified Joe, and you have a lot of his toys in your house. Now, as a freelancer, he's working with Skeletron, Boss Fight, and a number of other studios. And hopefully, Hasbro again. Who knows what the future holds? I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and I would recommend putting PowerCon on your schedule for next year, 2024. Actually, I heard a thing from Russell. You were working on 4-inch Joes back in the day, weren't you?
Yes.
See, I didn't realize that.
During the pursuit of Cobra Line, and Retaliation and whatever that became, I was a freelancer, but exclusively working for Hasbro, just because that was my client. They kept me busy enough. Yeah, so I did some of those figures, and Dave Proctor was the sculpt manager for G.I. Joe at the time, and me and him got along really well, and so he gave me significant work. He was the Hasbro manager that I worked with the most. So I have done quite a few of the modern 4-inch Joes as well.
That's awesome.
I mean, not nearly as many as Classified and not nearly as many as like Fred did, because Fred was doing a Joe every day. There's a couple. So you're meaning John Russell from
Yes.
Chicken Fried Toys? Yes. I did the hit and run head, and I think he had maybe an accessory that I worked on too, but
that is his like white whale figure.
Yes. Which I find random. I guess that's the word. It's just like a random figure in a collection of amazing figures that he's like, this is the one and I love it.
Everybody's got a favorite.
That's true. That's true.
Everybody's got a favorite. And it's cool that it was one of yours.
Yeah. It was a very minimal partial, like I say, I think it was a head. I think I may have done the helmet for it, or maybe that one was existing.
I think the head is really what for him makes it his favorite. Because it's the right haircut and head shape, and he goes on and on about the stubble and the...
Yeah, I mean, I was really proud of that sculpt. One of my favorites was the Zombie Viper I got to do, and I was super proud of that and happy and excited to do it. Generally, the more weird the character is, the more excited I am for it, but the Zombie Viper in Pursuit of Cobra... have fun with that, and it was a very different type of zombie, not like the decayed flesh, but more of like a toxic.
Yeah, they had the Toxo zombie in what, 93, that was basically like pink. And so this, like the one you worked on, was so much more like visceral and fun. And
yeah.
And everybody immediately glommed onto it and then went back to go, oh yeah, we've always liked this other one.
Yeah. Did you though? Yeah, actually, I had mentioned to Russell, John Russell as well, I worked on this one as well. And he was like, I didn't know that. He was like, that was the first figure that I troop build. And he's like, I bought so many of those things. I was like, ah. But great guy, very friendly.
Yeah. And his sculptor, Kalen, seems really nice.
Yeah. And super talented. I actually just picked up a job from Russell to work on his Western line.
Awesome. And I know Arlen has too. He's worked on that line as well.
Yep. Arlen's done a couple figures here and there. Kalen has certainly done the mass majority of it. Wicked talented kid. I mean, it certainly seems like John keeps him quite busy.
Fred and Tony were the guys that were with you at Boss Fight.
Correct. Yep. They are the two Boss Fight sculptors. Yep. So they do all of the sculpting, and they work with some outside vendors as well, here and there, but they do a lot of it themselves too. Yeah. But everything Boss Fight does funnels through them in some way. Fred has been, he's one of the partners. So he's been with Boss Fight since the inception. And Tony joined the team 3 years ago, maybe. But he's also remote. So Tony lives in Cincinnati and the rest of Boss Fight exists in Massachusetts.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Everything's digital these days. So
sure. You're on the Rhode Island side of that line, right?
Yes, technically. I am right on the line. If I got on my roof, I'm pretty sure I can see Massachusetts.
Well, that was when talking to Ron and Jenny, they're on the Massachusetts side of the line. I was like, well, how far is that? And he was like, 30 minutes, dude. I was like, okay, never mind. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. So Rhode Island is, this big. You can travel completely across it the long way in an hour.
Oh, okay.
It's very small. It is the smallest state.
I didn't realize it was that small. I knew it was the smallest state. I didn't realize that Hasbro was so close to the border. But then I guess if it's only an hour the long way, then everything is close to the border.
Exactly. It is. So, if this is Rhode Island, Providence is right in the middle. And Pawtucket, where Hasbro is a little bit north, but it's three quarters or whatever through the state. And so, I mean, yeah, when we would go to lunch, we would go to Massachusetts.
Okay. It was funny because walking around at PowerCon with Ben and Mark or with you or with Chris or John, I find myself constantly trying to disappear when, I guess in my mind, the way I put it was when the grownups are talking. So when you guys would start talking to another artist about sculpting or painting or manufacturing of some sort,
mm-hmm.
Oh, this is an interesting conversation. I can stay and hit all the hot goss. Or
yep.
I can just quietly see myself out.
Yep, yep.
That is a normal me thing. But so have you ever been to PowerCon before?
No, that was my first.
I'm completely speaking out of school, but my understanding is that it's been in Anaheim and Mattel was attached for years.
That would make sense.
I don't know why it came back to Ohio. I don't know Val, although we have mutual friends like Aaron and Kenny.
Mm.
But I don't know. I didn't ask why it moved back to Ohio, where Mattel was. But I like that. So I'm used to with toy shows. I go to enough comic book and toy shows and gaming shows and et cetera. When I go to toy shows these days, I know 80 to 85% of the vendors and artists and guests. I know 100 or hundreds of attendees. I knew less than 10 people that were attending PowerCon. And I knew less than 5% of the guests like you or the vendors. I wasn't sure if I would enjoy it. I fell in love with it.
Yeah, same.
And that's why I said, I don't know your experience. But from my experience, it felt like home, but I don't know anyone in the building.
Yeah, I get that. So for me, Joe Fest was my first experience with a convention where the social aspect of it was more important than the convention itself. And, I have been to tons of conventions, San Diego, Star Wars Celebration, anime conventions, random toy conventions, small conventions, big conventions, all over the place. Joe Fest really was the first one that I went to where it was okay, we did the convention. That was great. Now let's have the party, and let's hang out with our friends, and everyone knew each other and it was social and doing all this. And that was my first experience with that, and it was incredible. And honestly, a big part of that was from you. You were so welcoming to just be hey, hang out. Hey, and you were really great at making me feel like I had been there for years. And obviously everyone else, who wanted to talk to me and everything was great. And then at PowerCon, it had a lot of that same thing, but I do feel like a lot of people didn't know each other. They knew each other by association. With PowerCon being it has kind of become the hub of the independent toy companies.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, which was incredible. And, you know, with that, everyone was just like, hey, I see what you're doing over there. And that's super cool. You know, what do you got next? You know, and I really want to see, you know, get my hands on this or whatever, you know. And then they're like, you know, yeah, of course. And what you're doing is awesome. You know, and it was very much this, everyone in the small independent creator space were fans of each other. And so that was a really cool experience to see, you know, and obviously all the vendors were great, you know, as well, you know, the comic shop vendors and whatnot. And, you know, they were all very friendly, and the product that you get there was quite different, you know, than what you would get as just like a standard toy convention, you know, or Comic-Con or whatever, because it is specialized in He-Man, but it does have, I don't know, more of the like 80s nostalgia connection than a lot of other conventions. But really the independent toy creator space was what captured me, you know, and with the new position that I'm in, it was very much like, you know, business cards, throwing them out to everybody, which was great.
Are physical business cards still a thing, or is this more of a digital, here's my QR code?
I mean, I handed out physical business cards, and I came home with a small stack of physical business cards. So yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Actually, I guess there was really only one that was like, here's a card with a QR code, and you can find all the information there, which was also nice, but.
At Joe Fest, we show up days early.
Right.
When I met you at Joe Fest, you were sitting in a chair sort of in the middle of a bunch of people I knew.
Yeah.
I am problematically extroverted, meaning like sometimes I don't know when to be like, hey, I've had your ear for 3 hours. Maybe I should let you wander away.
Gotcha.
So it's very like normal for me to see you sitting there. Would you like to join us? Because of Lenny and Emily's like, shows, we've seen you. You've shown up, cool new figure. So it wasn't that I was completely oblivious to who you were, but I want people to feel welcome. And so it worked out really nice for me because you were really fun to talk to and not, I wasn't trying to find an escape.
Right.
Here we are months later at PowerCon, and I wasn't going to go. And then my weekend freed up. I wasn't going to go because it was last minute for me. I'm not paying last minute hotel prices.
Of course.
And a handful of people were like, oh, you should come. But no, I don't have a place to stay. If you find some, you should come. And then Ben and Mark, who I guess legitimately are also how you and I are tied together, because they brought you to Joe Fest.
Yep. I wouldn't have been there without them.
And I wouldn't have been at PowerCon without them, because they were like, hey, listen, we're sharing a room. You know, you can sleep in the chair in the ottoman, which... Listen, I'm not bougie. It was enough. I was like, all right, let's roll.
Yeah.
I got up at 2 a.m. I powered up there Saturday morning. So I missed all of Friday. So
that's wild.
You guys got in what, like Wednesday, Thursday, or did you guys come in Friday morning?
Got in Thursday evening.
So how was it like Thursday night and all of Friday set up? And as you said, like as everybody's kind of getting to know their peers that they're fans of.
So Thursday, you know, it was very much check into the hotel. You know, I saw a couple of people that I recognized there. Robo from the Foosh, we had met a couple of times at other conventions. So I saw him. We chatted for a couple minutes, you know, and then it was like, okay, now we're going up to a room and crashing for the night. Now, I don't know if other people got together Thursday night, you know, and partied and socialized. But the immediate people that I knew, you know, didn't. Also, Fred, well, I guess, side story to that. The convention was in Columbus. Tony lives in Cincinnati. So for him, it was just a drive up. And I was already in Cincinnati for two weddings the week before and the week before that.
Oh, wow.
So I had been in Cincinnati for just under 3 weeks by the end of it. But in any case, so I was driving up from Cincinnati. Tony was also coming from Cincinnati. And Fred was driving in with all of the product from Rhode Island. And so, you know, which is about a 15-hour drive.
He drove that?
Yes.
Holy shit. All right.
In a day.
Oh, good. Fuck. Good for him.
Yeah. Yep. So he didn't get into Columbus until, 11 o'clock, midnight-ish. So he just parked the car, checked in, and crashed. And so I didn't even see him Thursday. Friday morning, the convention didn't start till 2 o'clock. Wednesday morning was when everyone was coming in, you know, and pulling stuff from trucks and setting up their booths and whatnot. And so, yeah, Friday morning, we all got in, you know, and we all met down at the convention floor. And yeah, so we started setting stuff up. And then that was when people from other booths and other companies, you know, would kind of start walking around, and we were still setting stuff up. And they're like, ooh, you know, what are you putting out? We're like, oh, some of this, some of that. And they're like, all right, well, we'll come by when you're all set up. You know, and there was quite a bit of that. And then the show opened, you know, and it was open from 2 to 8, which was cool.
That's like a comic book show Friday, not a toy.
Yeah.
Toy show Fridays are like 3 hours.
Right.
6 hours is a comic book show Friday. Holy shit.
Exactly. But since it didn't start till 2, you know, going all the way till 8 o'clock, you know, realistically, you know, we didn't get dinner until 9:30 or something like
right.
that, you know, from closing down the show, covering everything up and everything, you know, which was fine. But all three of us, when we were sitting down for dinner, we're like, oh, we haven't eaten anything all day, which was like, we need to not do that tomorrow. But yeah, the first day, though, you know, it was fun. It was certainly busy, but a different kind of busy than Saturday. Saturday was the most busy. That's when the most people are there. But Friday was busy because that's when all of the 3-day people come in and they want to get all the stuff, you know, before the crowd comes in. So they're the ones that are looking for the deals specifically, because, you know, if something's a really good deal, that's what's going to go quick. But we did do, you know, pretty well selling on Friday as well. So it was surprisingly busy. But then Saturday, of course, was where the biggest crowd was.
When I rolled in Saturday, I didn't know what time that opened. So I guess I showed up about 30, 45 minutes after it opened. As soon as I walked in, I saw some friends I haven't seen in like 6 years.
Mm.
And but they're Motu people. So they're not going to show up at like the Joe-centric shows, but they'll show up at the Motu-centric shows. So I ran into them. That was cool to, you know, catch up after 5-6 years.
Yeah. Were they industry people or just fans?
No, just fans. Dealers and YouTubers and just collectors. Ran into Aaron and Mary Mercenary at Roma Collectibles. Chris Neal and Kenny at Toy Department before making my way down and running into Ben and Mark and you
yep.
and Molly and Ryan. And in all of that conversation, I don't remember who all was there or how it worked out, but you very kindly gave me a bed instead of me sleeping on Molly and Ryan's air mattress on Ben and Mark's floor. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah. I mean, it worked out. When I went to check in, they had booked. So Boss Fight booked the room, and I was just like, cool, whatever, it's fine. And they had booked me a one king. And then at the counter, the lady was like, well, if you're okay with, you know, two queens, we can get you higher up in the tower. And I was like, well, I don't really need a king. So hell yeah, let's do that. you know, and so then I was like, all right, you know, so I was on floor 24, and which had a gorgeous view, which was pretty cool. You know, and then it just happened to work out that I was a single person with two beds.
I took over your storage bed.
Yeah.
Which was funny because, like, I was just at a show 2 weeks ago, and this was last minute, and A's birthday is in just 2 weeks. So I was like, I can't spend a lot of money here. I can spend money on gas. No matter where I'm in the world, I've got to eat.
Yep.
So I got to be cool, like, be chill on the wallet. I got to tell you, I did amazing in that regard, but it hurt to not spend money because there was so much good shit.
Yeah, I did terribly.
But you already had like a bunch of stuff in the room.
Yeah.
I know Sunday morning you were like, oh, I got to get more stuff.
Yeah.
But Saturday for me was very cool because not only did I know no one, but those that I do know or did know there, I'm very close with all of them. There was no one that was like, oh, we're okay acquaintances.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're the only person I know, so I guess I'll hang with you, you know.
Right, it was none of that, yeah. Whether it was Aaron and Mary Mercenary or Chris and Kenny, Ryan and Molly, Ben and Mark, you, Chris Scott and John Russell, and just everyone I ran into, I was close with, so it was nice that I constantly had a good friend to hang out with. But also because, like, I am close with all you guys, I want to move away when business talks because I don't want to be that third wheel. Like, ooh, 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 what figure are you talking about? Ooh, what are you doing? Ooh, what are you doing?
Sure.
at the same time, like, as soon as I walk up, I had just seen on Instagram that you had a new figure revealed through Boss Fight.
Yeah.
For whatever reason in my head, I was kept renaming Boss Fight as Four Horsemen, which was dumb.
Oh, sure.
And I asked you about it in the room, and you were like, what are you talking about? Four Horsemen had an holy shit level of line.
Yes. So, you know, the Four Horsemen, they are intricately connected with MOTU. When the 2000X series was coming out, you know, they did all of the design and sculpture work for that series completely as freelancers. You know, they were not Mattel connected, you know, other than they were a design and sculpture studio. And, you know, they did, to my knowledge, that entire line. And then when that eventually became, you know, MOTU Classics, they did that entire line. And the Classics line was, it went on a long time, you know, and so they were constantly just working on He-Man figures for years, you know, probably close to two decades.
So they are dyed in the blood.
Yes. Yeah, they are deeply connected with the MOTU fandom. And so then, I don't know when specifically, but the new Revelation stuff, you know, that's handled all through Mattel. And I don't think that they're connected to that, you know, other than maybe working on it here and there. I have no knowledge of that. But when they started doing the Legion stuff, they wanted to be more connected with PowerCon. And, you know, I assumed that that was sort of how it happened. And so, you know, they've had a PowerCon exclusive, you know, through Legions for the last couple of years. So this year, I mean, between Cosmic and Mythic, they had three different exclusives at this convention, which was like kind of wild. And in both Cosmic and Mythic Legions, they've done a lot of MOTU tribute figures. Essentially, they use all existing tooling and, you know, they'll kit bash and deco a figure to resemble a MOTU character. And so this year they had a, you know, one of the Cosmic guys that had three different heads and it was decoed Manny Faces like, you know, so it was sort of the tribute to Manny Faces. And then they also had a, you know, one of their brand new 9-inch dragon guys who was a tribute to Whiplash.
Okay.
So they decoed it green. They gave it, you know, some of the iconic sort of color breaks of Whiplash, you know, but it was just also a cool dragon guy. And so I picked that up and it was incredible.
That was my next question. Did you get these?
I got those two. There was a third one that I don't think was MOTU tribute, but I did not get that one. And so I'm going to have to get it on the secondary market because,
ouch,
I was a fool.
Sure. Well, I'd ran into Paul from Plastic Battles, and I think he had mentioned he had been in that line for two, maybe two and a half, 3 hours, Saturday morning, which is wild.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw them at a show was back in March, and we're standing in our booth, and it's 35 minutes after early entry. We haven't seen anybody. We were like, oh shit, is this show gonna bomb?
Right.
And then we look up and we see, no, the entire attendee roster is in their line.
Yep.
And once people made it through their line, we got busy fast, but we were just like, oh.
Yeah, the early entry things, I mean, that's almost exclusively for picking up exclusives or hard to find things, which the Horsemen Legion figures are both.
Yes. I am so very enamored with the Cosmic Legions. Cost per figure, I keep telling myself I don't need them. I don't need them. I don't need them. I also tell myself a lot that like 6 inch isn't my scale. However, I troop build both G.I. Joe and Star Wars. So is it really not? Legitimately, I want everything to be O-ring 3¾, but that is a little myopic. I understand that. But with 6 inch, as much as I decry it as not my scale, my wallet says otherwise.
Yeah, I completely understand. 6 inch is my scale, and I have hundreds upon hundreds of 4-inch figures.
Right.
That's how it goes.
the figure that was announced of yours this weekend through Boss Fight, that's 6-inch.
6-inch, yep.
But that's for what was traditionally a 4-inch line? Are they just upscaling the line or?
They are doing two scales of the same line.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah. I imagine that one of them won't be supported, you know, as long as the other.
I like that less.
Well, I mean, that is my assumption. They haven't implied that, you know, as of now, they're going to continue making, you know, both scales in, you know, full force, if you will.
Your assumption is just an admittance of you've worked in business and
right.
What makes money gets fed.
Yes, exactly.
That's 100% normal throughout the world. I like that. The figure that you did, I don't know the name of the figure.
It's very easy. Death. Oh.
Well, okay. Well, so that's it. Because it has that faceless, beautiful, I don't know what you call that. I don't want to call it a mask.
I've been calling it his crown.
Okay. The whole figure is just stupidly detailed and gorgeous. And
thank you.
And I'm just looking at grayscale. Once you start throwing color on that, holy shit.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that being announced there.
Thank you. Thank you.
At Joe Fest, it was announced that you were working with Skeletron, who, you know, from a G.I. Joe perspective, that's as big as it gets because Skeletron is on fire. One, because the product is dope, but then two, because
it's incredible.
The people are genuinely sweethearts.
Yes.
I love them dearly. And they are both... I got to stop complimenting them because they're both in my in my ear about making some assembly required decisions that I was going to put off for a couple more years, but now it doesn't look like I will.
Yep. I mean, yeah.
I don't know if you're considering that at all.
Yes, I absolutely am. And the last conversation we had, which was at Joe Fest, so admittedly that was a bit ago, you know, they were planning on bringing me.
Oh,
you know, and so if that happens, I will definitely be there. If not, you know, and it's up to my own devices. I certainly want to go, you know, and would like to, but that will come down to timing and budget and blah 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 that I haven't taken the time to look at yet. So, which it's coming up soon. So I guess I need to.
It is. It is.
Yep.
So back to PowerCon. Well, welcome to my brain.
I get it. I'm ADHD too.
So I'm walking around. Chris introduced me to Bill from Fresh Monkey Fiction and Craig from Zyka Toys, which Craig, he had his O-Ring Riot Commandos there, which I have five of. I love them very much. And he had a dumb price on them, so I bought 10 more.
May as well.
That was the only thing I purchased at the show.
That is strong restraint.
Yes, that was a very nice mea culpa for not bringing A.
Yep.
And that was also where meeting Craig, I was like, I'm interested in what Zyka Toys is doing. And he was like, it is Zyka. And I went, thank you.
Good to know.
Yes, which is why I bring it up here. Like, I called it the wrong thing. And then Arlen was with them. And then across from them was Alyosha or John Russell with Kaylin. I think he was showing off the First Sergeant figure, which was his Duke homage with Michael Bell's head.
Mm.
So from a G.I. Joe 4-inch perspective, it's a beautiful Duke body, and it's the voice of Duke's head. So yeah,
it's pretty cool.
It's an older guy, but I mean, it's Michael Bell.
Right.
How badass is that?
That was pretty cool. I'm not sure I saw that one. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I think this is where he was sort of showing it off at. It wasn't with him at Joe Fest. So I'm expecting to see a lot out of that figure and from him. He's a Joe guy.
Yeah.
He legit licensed Michael Bell. So that's, which he had already done that with Keone Young. Although Keone Young's was a little bit more of a very cool if you watch Deadwood. But Keone Young was the voice of Storm Shadow.
Oh, okay. I didn't have that connection.
We introduced Greg Berger to John back at Joe Fest, who is the voice of Firefly and Spirit and Cutter and a few others. So I don't know if he has anything in the works for that. That is a thing I've politely not asked, but I absolutely hope.
Seems like something that you could ask.
So that is not the first time you've said those words to me. I am what I am.
Yep.
I will continue to ask just a moment too late.
Great.
But Arlen, like you, has worked on G.I. Joe Classified, again, with the whole, like, not my scale, I have how many of your figures in my house? It's a lot. But I didn't do anything at this show. I butterflied around, looked at PowerCon. You can tell that, one, they were in Anaheim. They were attached to Mattel because they did a very, like, large comic book show sort of thing where I got a pamphlet of everyone at the front door when I purchased my day ticket. And I went through and I counted. And so by my count, just what's in their book, not counting designers and artists and authors also on the floor, just counting indie toy shops, which I know Super 7, NECA, and Four Horsemen are big enough where maybe we don't call them indie anymore, but they're not multi-billion dollar companies like Hasbro, Mattel, Kenner. They're still indie.
Right.
Counting all the toy companies that were in that booklet, we're at either 48 or 53 because they didn't name all of the different Glios companies. They just said Glios Alley, and it was six booth numbers.
And I think it was actually more than that represented. I currently have a image pulled up of all of the different companies that were there, and it is significant.
You're right, because I forgot, like, Invincible Toys, they weren't part of the Indie Alley. They were way down with some vendors. So I don't think they're on the map. So 55 to 60 independent toy lines. If you want to not buy Hasbro ever again, this is your show.
Yeah, for sure.
If you want to supplement your Hasbro, this is your show.
Yep.
There's so many sculptors and painters, customizers, designers on the floor, either behind the booth representing a company like you were with Boss Fight with Fred and Tony, but they were also just walking around. It was phenomenal.
It was really cool.
I want to come back to PowerCon.
Good. Me too.
The people I knew at PowerCon are also the people, like you mentioned very early on with Joe Fest, those of us that treat Joe Fest as more of a community gathering than a shopping opportunity. It is clearly both. They were the ones that were at PowerCon. So we went out, and I've never seen this before. And clearly the convention center is large enough, but the convention center was hosting an anime con at the same time on the same floor of the convention center.
Yep. Yep.
As PowerCon. So we went for sushi, not thinking about an anime convention and Japanese food is probably not where we want to.
Yep.
So the line was a little long, but the sushi was fantastic.
Oh, good.
And then we went out. You guys met up with us. I think we turned off the lights at 4 a.m.
Okay.
Saturday night.
We left before that.
I mean, we went upstairs before that, but I think we turned the lights off around 4. I know at one point I wanted to go back to my car to get my clothes. I think you said it was a bad idea because I was housed. Yeah. I was pretty rough. I normally don't go that hard, and I went that hard. So I was a little, I don't carry my pro card anymore. I was housed. You got caught in a conversation, so I wandered off to my car.
That's right, you did.
I futzed around in my car, and then I walked all the way back thinking, like, good job, Jason, mission accomplished. And I got back to you and went, I didn't get my shit.
Which I found hilarious.
I timed it from hotel room to car to back, and it was a 25-minute walk.
Yeah. Everything in this convention was very far away.
I don't remember the conversation you were having Saturday night, but I remember I was a bit, because I was housed, I wasn't quick enough to have the skills to determine, is this a good conversation? And if not, should I intervene? But at a certain point, you very kindly went, Jason, we should go upstairs. And I went, yes.
Yep. I was chatting with Justin, who is part of the Vitruvian Army. Or not part of. He is the Vitruvian Army.
Oh, yes.
It was a great conversation, but one where everyone was fairly inebriated. And so when I looked over at you and you were swaying in the wind, I was just like, I think it's time for us to go.
Which is funny because Ben was still sitting over to the side. When we went upstairs, he was still sitting down talking to somebody. I don't know who he was talking to.
He was. I don't know who it was either.
But the next morning, Ben walks over and says, do you know why I like getting super drunk at conventions? And I said, why? And he goes, someone always does it more than me. That was you. And then walked off with his hands above his head as if some sort of victory march. So I take back every nice thing I've said about Skeletron or Ben.
There you go.
Sunday was for me. So Sunday, our relationship with the show is going to be very different. For me, I had already walked the whole show. I think the floor, I'm estimating, but I think the floor was somewhere between like 20 to 25,000 square foot. I walked the whole floor Saturday. I walked the whole floor many times Sunday. I was still seeing things I hadn't seen yet because there was so much to see. But I was constantly in an internal dialogue of, when do I leave to make it home? It's a 5.5 hour drive. And I left probably 2.5 hours later than I should. But some friends called me on the way home and it felt like a 20 minute drive because you're talking to people and just having a good time. Except I blew my voice out Saturday night.
Oh, yes, you did.
I got it back Wednesday. So listen, so your experience is going to be like different because like mine was constantly going, is this a conversation that I need to wrap up and leave? Or can I walk away and come back later to say goodbye?
Right. I get that. Yeah. For me, you know, Sunday was a fucking blur because for me, Sunday was priority one, get the Horseman exclusives that I hadn't gotten yet. I was legitimately stressed about this. And then two is network. Friday, I had spent the majority of the convention in the Boss Fight booth, you know, and then Saturday I did about half of it in the booth and half of it was sort of walking around. And I obviously did networking, you know, at all of it. But Sunday I was like, okay, I haven't talk to like this person or this person or this person yet, you know, and I want to make sure that I'm making these connections because that's where my livelihood is going to be, you know, leaving the convention. You know, that was the whole point of me being there. Well, okay, part of the point, because I also wanted to be there for Boss Fight, you know, because it was just the two of them. And, you know, the figure that I participated in was being revealed. And so I was like, oh, well, I want to be there for that too. But also, knowing how many companies were going to be there, I want to get my name out there. I want them to know that I'm available to work with, you know, and that I have a level of expertise that, you know, they can leverage. And so, yeah, Sunday for me went so fast because I was just, you know, hitting booth, you know, and having, you know, a ton of great conversations, you know, but I saw the Boss Fight booth like very little on Sunday. Which was fine. They were perfectly fine on their own. But I did the Boss Fight panel on Sunday, which was kind of fun.
I missed all the panels, but you went to a couple.
Boss Fights was the only one I was at because I was in it. Yeah, I had intended to go to a couple of them, but, you know, you get caught up in the con day and then it's just like, oh, wait, what time is it? Oh, I missed that by like 4 hours. Okay, so the Boss Fight panel, I wasn't going to be part of it. Because, I mean, I'm not part of Boss Fight and I've only done one figure for them. And they, you know, they have a whole catalog of things that they're doing. So I wasn't going to be part of it, but Fred and Tony were going to do it. Fred and Tony, incredibly talented, amazing guys, super fun, not public speakers.
I've seen that. I saw that a lot at this show where a lot of these guys are not necessarily extroverts.
Exactly.
Crazy engaging, but they're trying really hard because that is a portion of the business.
And, you know, when it comes down to it, all of the independent creators are here because they're extremely passionate about toys. Mm-hmm. It's not because that's where the money is. I guarantee you that. You know, and so they got into this because they're passionate about it and they wanted to, you know, make something. You know, really, Skeletron with Ben is the only, you know, company that's like actually, you know, extroverted and, you know, a PR and marketing focused, you know, well, NECA and McFarlane and Super 7 kind of aside. But so in any case, you know, it was just going to be them. And the way they were talking about the panel, you know, they were like, well, we have an hour to do the panel. We have this PowerPoint. You know, I was like, well, if you guys want, you know, I can be part of the panel and I can essentially be the crowd. And, you know, when something comes up that I feel, you know, is interesting or whatever, I can sort of MC for you, you know, and ask you questions and sort of engage you, you know, in the product naturally, if you will. And they were like, oh, yeah, that would be great. Only if you want. I don't want to step on toes. I know this isn't my product, you know, but I can be part of that if you want. They're like, yeah, they were excited to have me, which is great, you know, and very flattering of them. You know, it went over very well. You know, Fred ran the PowerPoint, you know, and he was the primary spokesperson. Obviously, he's, you know, one of the partners of the company and he's been there from the beginning. You know, and Tony, of course, included things here and there. I would interject things, you know. For instance, you know, at the very beginning, they had a, you know, introduction of we are Boss Fight Studios, and they had sort of the mission statement of the company. And then Fred went on to the next slide. And I was like, oh, actually, hold on, Fred, you know, why don't you tell everyone how the company started? And at first he was like, eh, that's a long story. I don't want to tell it. I was like, Fred, come on. I mean, this is why I'm here. You know, I was like, give us a truncated, you know, shortened version. And he did. And it was great. You know, a very short story of a group of friends and colleagues that met at Hasbro, you know, kind of were all available at the same time, you know, no longer with Hasbro. And so they wanted to create something on their own. And, you know, that became Boss Fight. So there was things like that where he would be going through the slides and I'd be like, hey, why don't you tell us about this thing, you know, or, you know, explain to us how this figure sort of came to be or whatnot. And yeah, so, you know, I feel that that helped create some conversation. It made both of them more comfortable, you know, to talk about it. So, you know, it wasn't just them going, here's this thing. And I guess I'll tell you about it because it's on the slide. You know, I was able to be like, hey, I'm curious about this. Will you tell us that, you know, and type of thing. And so it went over very well.
Panels are hard. And, you know, some of us like being in front of a crowd and talking. Most of us don't.
Yes.
I often lean on people that are a bit more introverted or much more succinct when I do things like presentations because they cut me down to time. Whereas colleagues that are more like Fred and Tony will use me in much the same way that they used you to build a little time.
Right.
It's a good partnership. And so
yeah.
you made a comment that I've been thinking about ever since you made it.
Okay.
So you talked about participating in a figure.
Okay, sure.
I know for a lot of us, it feels like a lot of us do work singularly. And so when we're talking about things or like I did this or he did that, she did this. But when we're talking about sculpting figures and you talk about participating versus doing, is that telling me that like you are not the sole sculptor on something? And is that common?
Sure. So on the Death figure, which is the figure that I did for Boss Fight Studios, 6-inch Death from Court of the Dead, you know, I was almost the sole sculptor on that.
Okay.
I was intended to be. You know, but in the end, I was running out of time to finish it. And so it was like, hey, man, Fred was managing the project. I was doing the hands-on sculpting. At a certain point through the process, I was like, I know we really want to have this showable for PowerCon. Time's running out. You know, can I get someone to help me with it? You know, he was like, yeah, no problem. So he had another vendor help out to create the scythe and the forearms and the hands. Once I got that sculpt back, you know, of those parts, I still went in and made tweaks and adjustments on all of those parts anyway. But, you know, so it is almost entirely my sculpt, but with a little bit of assistance from another vendor.
Right.
And, you know, so there's things like that all the time. There's also a lot of partial figures. And so, you know, what we call partial figures is, you know, they'll kit bash a figure together, you know, or use some existing parts and then some new parts, you know, to go with it to create a new character. Perfect example of this is, you know, in Classified series, Flint and Duke. Flint and Duke are almost the entirely same figure, but they have different accessories, secondary harnesses and such, and different heads. And then, of course, completely different paint jobs. So when I was managing that line, Fred was the one that sculpted the Duke, and he sculpted that entire figure. And then when it was time to do Flint, a different sculptor, you know, I passed him the files for Duke and said, hey, we're going to sculpt these new parts to work with this existing sculpt, you know, and so that will create the new character. You know, and so on the Flint figure is essentially includes the sculpts of two different sculptors because it's a partial.
I think that makes sense. I think that is intuitively logical.
Yeah.
But I think that conversation gets missed a lot when we talk about who sculpted things.
Right.
And we always talk about a singular person and it's not always. Also, there's a lot of professional skill and self-awareness to say, I want a little help on something.
Yes.
But as an artist, to know how to and when to and why to ask for help just makes you a better artist. sometimes that gets missed in the broader scheme of things. So I love that breakdown, which is why the word participating stuck in my head. And I was like, oh, I want to ask about this.
Yeah. You know, and also when it comes down to it, Boss Fight has a huge library of brands that they work on, licenses, you know, their own figure lines and whatnot, you know, and I had a large part of a very small part of their entire portfolio. You know, and so that's more or less what I was referring to, you know, because at the show they had Popeye figures they were selling, you know, Hacks 4-inch figures, the 6-inch skeletons, 4-inch skeletons, you know, Strawberry Shortcake, wrestling figures, Sam and Max, and Umbrella Academy, and I think I'm even missing a couple. So it's like, you know, they had a huge breadth of figures that they had, you know, developed and whatnot. And so it's like, well, of all of this, you know, and I'm here with the company, I only actually had any hand in this one figure right here, you know, and so.
But it was revealed there. So that's nice.
It was. Yes. You know, and it was cool.
Which is also good for all of your fan peers, peer fans.
Yes, sure. Well, I mean, the people that were kind of paying the most attention are, you know, a lot of my Hasbro colleagues. I have a lot of friends and colleagues at Hasbro that, you know, when I was let go, were upset by it, you know, because they understand my passion and, you know, what I want to do. And as I've seen them from the time that I was let go, randomly seeing them out and about or at parties or whatever, they all are like, well, what are you working on? You know, and they want to know and they want to be able to
celebrate a friend.
Yes, they want to be able, they want me to be successful. Because they know how much I care about this. You know, yeah, when I was like, oh, I'm working on Skeletron or, you know, with Skeletron on these things, you know, they were really excited about that. Obviously, this the RoboSkull and the Kickstarter, it definitely made its rounds around Hasbro of people being like, whoa, this is cool and different, you know, than what we normally see. And so, you know, people were excited with me on that. But then actually being able to see, you know, the Death figure, you know, and some really nice photos of the 3D print, you know, and I've shared some of, you know, images of the sculpt itself with some people. That is no longer something that I have managed through someone else, but that was my hands creating this thing. And so a lot of my colleagues were really excited to see that, you know, and to see me being successful, of course, you know, and moving on into the next stage of what I'm doing. So which is really nice and appreciated. My wife is still at Hasbro, so she very frequently gets asked, you know, well, how's Corey doing? What's he up to? You know, and whatnot. So, you know, it has been really nice that the Hasbro family, you know, is there to support. They care and they, you know how much I care. And so, yeah, very side tangent.
No, that's a beautiful tangent. Before June, I didn't know you. And before Classified, I don't know that I'd seen pictures of you. I'd probably heard your name somewhere. But once Classified comes around, we're seeing Lenny on camera. We're seeing you on camera. And then Emily joins that team. We're seeing her on camera. And one of the things that I've been excited about Classified from is that it feels like, and I don't know them, but it feels like Lenny was a G.I. Joe kid who is G.I. Joeing it up as an adult. And Emily doesn't know G.I. Joe, which I find amazing because one, she seems to care to know. Seems to care to learn, and she likes something that a lifelong, tattooed, baptized in the blood G.I. Joe person may already have a pre-existing opinion about. So she gets to go, look at this wacky thing no one seems to like. I love it. And I'm over here going, oh, I like that too. That's delightful. Please bring some of that more into the line.
Yep.
So that we sort of break up the get off my lawn-ness of not just G.I. Joe, but all people as they love a thing for probably too long. And that excites me. And then, you know, them showing off all the photography and bringing you in and the other sculptors in, bringing in, I don't know his name, the guy who works on Transformers and has been doing the collabs with them. It seems like everyone enjoys G.I. Joe. And so it's very fun. And so when I get to meet you and we're talking and like, we love different scales, our main scales are just different. Like our fandoms are very similar,
yeah.
But we were talking about some of our differences. I think we both told each other it's okay to be wrong at least once. That's one that's part of friendship, but also I like where G.I. Joe is at in terms of the beauty of the the sculpts and the scale and everything. The only thing I don't like is that it feels that it's more targeted towards adults and not children. And I worry that as the toy industry as a whole, and you may have a different perspective because you work in it, but as a consumer, I've always worried that the toy industry as a whole, as we continue to follow 80s children and 90s children, we're leaving the people that are own this shit when we die, we're leaving them out of the equation. and that's, you know, not to be a downer or even to get into that philosophical conversation, just to say, like, I like classified G.I. Joe more than I anticipated, more than I want to admit, because I want to myopically be into my O-rings. but when you talk about like Court of the Dead being in two scales, that excites me. I wish G.I. Joe was being delivered at two scales. I wish most things were being delivered at two or three scales. It's one of the things Skeletron is doing that excites me the most. An O-ring, a 4-inch, and a 6-inch? Yes, please. I have 10 of the O-ring coming. I have a handful of the 6-inch coming. I don't know if I have any of the 4-inch. Alexander has already said, like, 10 is not going to be enough of that figure in O-ring. And I think we have 15 of the drones, and he's like, well, that's not enough. And I'm like, well, that's fine. If you play, I buy. Like, let's go.
That's awesome.
And then we didn't know we were a fan of your wife's work until just recently. And we are.
Oh, yes.
We didn't know we were a fan of your work until recently. And like, I got a lot of your shit in my house.
Yeah.
It just feels like the whole toy industry right now is so exciting.
Oh, my God. For sure.
Because of the space for 50, 60 indie shops to pitch tents at a random show in Columbus, Ohio. And not all of them are Super 7 or NECA or Four Horsemen big. Most of them aren't.
There were numerous booths and shops set up there that were not selling anything. Like Savage Crucible, they weren't selling anything because they're like, we just had our Kickstarter. We're still in development. We're still in production, you know, but we're also already moving on to wave two and three, you know. And so that was several of the companies that are like, you know, people are excited for, you know, these new things coming out, even though no one has them in hand yet, you know, and like that I find to be really cool because it's like, okay, we see what Savage Crucible is doing and they're making some really cool figures and I don't have them in hand yet, but I know that their designs are great and the passion of the people involved are going to make good stuff. And so I don't need to have them in hand before I decide whether or not I'm ready to go for round two. And there was several of those sort of instances, you know, around the convention, you know, or there was some obviously that was like, well, you know, we just got wave one and that's getting out there. And now we're jumping into wave two, you know, the Beasts of the Mesozoic.
Oh my God. Those things are gorgeous.
So good. And I'm good friends with David Silva, who, you know, is Creative Beast Studios. He was the one that originated all this. I met him when he was working with Hasbro, you know, and, you know, so we've been sort of observing each other's careers and, you know, getting to chat with him about everything that he's doing is incredible, you know, and the dinosaurs look so good. They're, you know, in my opinion, the best creature animal figures you can get, you know, and now with the Beasts of the Cyberzoic, you know, bringing in that futuristic fantasy sci-fi element, I'm like, I am all there. You know, I like dinosaurs well enough. I have, you know, many of the ones that he's done. But now that there's that extra element, I'm like, oh, I'm in danger.
The thing that I loved about that extra element was that it's not a robotic dinosaur. It's robotic stuff that goes on the dinosaur that can be its own thing beside the dinosaur and can seat a 4-inch figure.
I actually didn't know that part. I did not know that the armor, you know, was essentially a transformer until I was at PowerCon. I was like, whoa, wait a second. All of these armor things that I've been seeing can then become its own thing without the dinosaur completely. And that I was just like, oh, my God, it raises the bar. It brings something more. It makes it a toy, which is like that. I love, you know, and obviously incredibly high quality, beautiful designs, beautiful sculpts. And so, you know, it's incredible work.
It was gorgeous. I've seen them online. I've never seen them in person. And so to walk around the corner and they're right across from Jason with his Animal Warriors of the Kingdom, which are great figures.
Incredible.
And I've been seeing those since the 4-inch prototype. So like I'm very aware of how successful he's been. He's a sweetheart. His stuff is amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right across from them, I was like, oh, neat. Oh my God, those are dinosaurs. Holy shit. Those aren't just dinosaurs. Those are dinosaurs.
Yes.
And then to see the cyber stuff, it was very cool. But there are so many different toy lines there of different things. 6-inch is well and represented.
Yes.
But so was 4-inch. So was Glios. There was a whole Glios section. Right beside you was my friend Steve. He and his brother, they're 12-inch G.I. Joe guys. They run the show in Kentucky. I was just at 2 weeks before PowerCon.
Oh, wow.
But they have revived the late 70s Super Joe. And they have a new body for Super Joe. And they have a pretty expansive line.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time I went by, I was like, how are you doing at the show? And he's like, this isn't our crowd. We're doing better than expected. But I noticed that all the people that were stopping at his table would go to the Mego table. And all the Mego people would show up at his table. So it was nice that they were in such close proximity. There was a lot of good synergy between his figures, which are the same size as their figures. But that's where I mean, like, there's so much to get into. We mentioned earlier how Invincible Toys was not in the center of everybody. I don't know if they just got in late or whatever, but they're doing 6-inch figures. And I think there's two or three different lines there between Invincible and Fist. And like at Joe Fest, one of their guys out of South America somewhere, I'm not going to say the country because I'm going to get it wrong, out of South America, he was at Joe Fest and he's doing the Fist side of things. But then Zyka has an O-ring version of their paramilitary orc, which is their 6-inch figure. They've got an O-ring version coming out.
I didn't even see that. That's awesome.
I don't think they had it at the table, but they've shown it on Instagram that they're working on it.
I will have to look into that.
At the Zyka table, they only had a handful of 6-inch figures with Easy Kill 9 and their own next couple figures that fit with the Riot. And then they were sharing a table with, I can't remember his name right now, but he had the big Shogun Warrior robot.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
So again, we're going all the way from Glios to Shogun Warriors. There was Fresh Monkey Fiction wasn't selling anything, but they're showing off older 4-inch stuff, their newer 6-inch stuff. So many different things. I think the only thing they were selling was Chris's Dread Trooper. Chris is doing their Paintmaster stuff. But Chris, like we were talking about earlier, he's very extroverted. He's very engaging with the crowd. And so I didn't get to hang out with Chris that much because he's doing a lot of that heavy lifting for his partners who are a little more quiet. And not rude, not inaccessible, just quiet.
Yeah. I met Chris at Joe Fest, which was great, you know, and chatted with, you know, about a couple of things there. You know, and then I knew Arlen because I worked with him on G.I. Joe Classified series, you know, and so I had never met Arlen in person. You know, everything that we did was just over email and whatnot. And so when he came to introduce himself, I was just like, oh, my God, like, I know who you are. But I, you know, until you said your name, I had no idea who you were. So they introduced me to Bill. And yeah, he's a quiet guy, you know, pretty introverted. But, you know, we immediately hit it off on, you know, obviously I was being like, hey, what you're making is super cool. I want to be involved, you know, and he was very familiar with my work, you know, on Classified series, you know, and so he was just like, oh, that would be awesome. So we were chatting about stuff and, you know, it anytime that you have those introverted people, once you start talking about toys, you know,
they open right up every time.
They open up and yeah, you know, then they feel much more confident with what they're talking about, you know, and obviously passionate. And, you know, then the conversation becomes much more smooth. Definitely how it was with him. And, you know, so now we're exchanged contacts. So, you know, we'll see what comes of it later. But, you know, he was great to talk to. And, you know, everything that Fresh Monkey Fiction is creating and backing is fucking cool.
Really fun.
Yeah. I'm excited for it.
Fresh Monkey Fiction is killing me because they have a couple of different lines and they all just look just really fun. It's like, oh, here's our serious one and here's our not serious one. I'm going to put them right beside each other so you don't get too serious out or too goofied out. And I'm like, How is both of these coming out of the same house? I love it.
I mean, there is a part of it that sort of reminds me of Fortnite, you know, where there is the humor mixed in with, you know, the military and the serious things. But I feel that because they're more grounded in, you know, realism aesthetically, that everything, even their silly things, come off as more badass.
Yeah.
And so it definitely appeals to me, you know, and the like mad scientist that they're doing, that's just like a brain floating in a thing. And then, but it still has like a, you know, very, you know, fascist sort of uniform. I'm like, oh, that's super cool. And it's stupid. And I love it. And I need it, you know?
100%. I want to put that big Sasquatch with my O-ring figures.
Yes.
Because it makes sense to me that that monstrosity, instead of next to 6-inch, should be next to like 3 3/4. Just tower over everything.
It would be incredible.
You know, I mean, but that's how we play anyway. So speaking of, like, because you're in the industry, your relationship to toys is going to be a lot different than someone that's just bought them their whole lives or just got back into it last week. Now, how do you move away from the professional side to get on the floor and like play a little bit, build your dios or do photography, or how do you play?
Okay.
I know this isn't PowerCon, but I'm really curious because the wall behind you is very playable because nothing is in a package. Everybody has an equipment and it, everything, like each shelf is synergistic. So,
For me, to a certain extent, I can never turn off my production brain. I'll put it that way, because every toy that I get, you know, I look at it as, well, what would I have done? You know, is this how I would have done it? Would I have done it a little differently? You know, is this, you know, as good as what I would do? Is this better than I would do? You know, oh, what are they doing? How do I, you know, how do I get to that level, you know, and that type of thing. And so there's always that. But for me, being the sculptor, the most important thing is, how does the toy function? And obviously, a figure looking good, having a lot of detail, textures, you know, realistic fabric, et cetera, that all falls into sculpture. But for me, if you get a figure where its knee can only bend like 20 degrees, I'm like, wow, that was a failing of the sculptor, you know? And it's like, that is up to the sculptor to make sure that the articulation has range of motion that is going to be, you know, functional and playable. And so pretty much every figure that I get, once I open it, I go through every point of articulation and move it and see, how is it moving? How far is it moving? You know, is it, you know, going to lock up? Is the pin on the wrist big enough that it's going to be able to move, or am I going to break it? You know, these things. And so that's my first go-to of playing with every figure. And also, you know, when it comes down to it, that's why I open everything, is because the figure to me is what's important, not the package, the illustration on the front. Obviously, I love all those things as well, you know, and, you know, if something is bad, it's going to hurt the overall experience, you know, and if something's really good, it's going to make the overall experience better, you know. But for me, I certainly don't display anything in box. If I keep it in box, it's purely because it's going into storage, you know, for later, you know, access or whatever. But I need to open it, because that's the only way I can experience the sculpt, you know, and the figure itself. And so that is the most important thing to me. And then when it comes to playing with it, it is all about the storytelling in the posing. I come from a comic book illustration background. I went to school for comic book illustration. That was, you know, going to be my career path up until my junior year of college, when I discovered toy sculpting, that I was like, oh, screw that, I'm going to make toys. You know? but I have read so many comics. I've drawn comics, you know, and all these things, that I'm always looking for how to capture that dynamic pose and that dynamic storytelling in the toys that I'm playing with, you know. And so every figure that I get, I put in the most extreme pose that I can, even if it's ridiculous for them. You know, I got the Marvel Legends Blob figure the other day, and I was immediately like, okay, can I balance him on one foot sprinting towards another figure?
Oh, that's amazing.
And I did, and it looked rad.
Yeah, know? I would imagine that looks amazing.
It looks right. that's how I approach everything, you know, and even the Mythic Legions, which are not, they're great figures. I love them. The articulation is not the selling point of the figures, but they have this overall presence that any pose you put them in makes them badass. And so I'm always looking for, you know, okay, how can I push their pose, you know, to be more unique, to be more, you know, story driven, you know, to bring the viewer into what they're doing. And that is always for me the thing that's exciting about toys and how I play with them. You know, and occasionally I will do like little diorama shots, you know, and set up the figures interacting. You know, I try to do that. Well, I mean, I do that quite a bit, but I generally don't do a lot of environment things. I'm trying to get more into it, you know, and I try to get more into the toy photography side of things. But I am the worst photographer in the world.
I feel you there.
You know, which is why, you know, when I was at Hasbro, I loved the diorama shot days because I could just go into the photography studio where, you know, they had professional photographers, they had set up a diorama, you know, environment. And then I would be like, hey, can I just come down and play with the toys? And then you could take pictures of it and it'll be gorgeous, you know? And they were like, yeah, we love that.
That's amazing. So I want that to be my day job.
Yeah. I mean, it was so fun, you know, and the one that really sticks out in my mind is when we revealed the Python Patrol and Tiger Force, Viper, Bat, and Outback. And so because we were revealing them all three at the same time, I was like, well, can I set up scenes where all three of them are interacting? And they were like, sure, no reason not to. There are legal reasons why we can't have, you know, why Hasbro can't have old figures interacting with new figures. But if they're on the shelf all at the same time, then it's generally okay.
Sure. That's a paperwork situation. We get it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, they were like, yeah, of course. And so, you know, I was able to set up some, you know, really fun fight scenes between the three of the figures and having them really interact. You know, and one of the things that I took from comics, particularly when illustrating a comic book cover, if you have multiple characters that are fighting, one of the things that you can do to really make it dynamic is have it so that either of the characters look like they could win the fight. Now, I mean, obviously you can do it where, you know, the Juggernaut could be standing over a beaten Wolverine. You know, that is obviously a way to do a story, you know, on a cover that's very compelling. That's very like, whoa, what happened? You know, but you can also do one where they're both intertwined in this battle where neither of them necessarily look like they've beaten the other one and neither of them look like they're going to lose comparatively. And so I like to bring that type of dynamicism into my posing, you know, and how I play with my toys. That was a very long answer, but there you go.
That was a beautiful answer. And I was good for at least another 25 minutes of that answer. No, I like legitimately being able to walk into the studio and pose a bunch of shit and then a professional photographer walking in behind you. That sounds like that is the dream right there.
Oh, my God. It was incredible.
Because I'm sharing this hobby with, you know, a 12-year-old, he plays. Whereas I set up scenes like you do, and like a lot of adults do. And I've got a storyline in my head. I'm setting things up and I invariably I'm like, oh shit, this looks amazing. Let me pull out my camera. And it doesn't. And I'm like, well, yep. What the hell? And then I just took a picture yesterday that accidentally looks amazing. A was playing and walked away and I just got the right angle of his play. I was like, he didn't even set this up. There's no effort here. Yeah. And it looks good on camera. When I spend an hour, it looks bad. So I'm with you on being an awful photographer. There are some incredible photographers in our hobby.
Oh my God, yes.
They're photographing in a way that elevates other people's work and another company's brand to just weirdly incredible heights. And I love toy photography for that reason.
Me too. You know, it was something that we were very aware of at Hasbro because when G.I. Joe Classified series started coming out, you know, there was a lot of questions of, you know, who is the audience for this? what collectors are getting it and that type of thing, you know. And obviously, G.I. Joe has a phenomenal history of collectors, you know, but also going into a new scale, there was a lot of like, well, are they going to like this? Are they going to show up for it? You know, and so there was a lot of questions when Classified Series started. And obviously, it caught on big. You know, G.I. Joe figures were selling more than Star Wars Black Series, Marvel Legends, you know, which is incredible. They have no entertainment. The history of the brand hadn't really been doing anything for several years before it. You know, but people loved the quality of the figures and they became really good for toy photography. And so we quickly could tell, like, the incredible toy photographers on Instagram were selling the Joes, you know, and they were the ones that were making the figures look good, which then made the viewers look at it and go, oh, fuck, that bat looks awesome, you know, running out of a burning building or whatever, you know, they would have it posed doing. It sold them the fantasy, you know, which is the same thing in the 80s. Of the illustration on the cover of the boxes, particularly on the vehicles, exact same marketing tactic, just now it's on social media and with, you know, amateur photographers.
Yeah, and it's also what Kim Simmons was doing with Star Wars photography, and when he built all of the photography box art and package art, because that was all just, that was this, it was toy photography. I brought up Plastic Battles earlier, but he is a big advocate for the inserts that Benelux was doing for G.I. Joe, like overseas. I don't remember the country, like Norway or Sweden or something, but the photography in there was such good toy photography that, like you're saying, today with Instagram and everything else, it's all in that same discipline, that same mindset, and it works. It's been working for 40 years if you look at Star Wars.
Yeah.
So it's cool that you guys at Hasbro noticed it and like attacked that.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things, you know, this was probably a year ago now. I was in a meeting where, you know, they were discussing the sales and such of G.I. Joe Classified. And they talked about the largest demographic for Classified Series was the 17 to 25 year old.
Oh,
right. And I was like, whoa, you know, 17 to 25, when you think about, well, what is their connection to G.I. Joe?
Zero.
You know, the movies, I guess, but like they didn't even become cult classics or anything, you know, they kind of just came and went. And so it was like, okay, well, why is it connecting with them? And it's because of social media. They're the ones that are the most on social media, the most connection to YouTube and Instagram. And so they're the ones that are seeing the toy photography, the toy reviews, you know, and those types of things that are getting the most interested in the brand because they're seeing other people enjoying the figures, talk about how good they are, you know, and it drove them to want to be part of that.
I mean, you heard me complain about no next generation. So that is a next generation conversation, which excites the shit out of me.
Me too. You know, I mean, obviously my bread and butter of my career, you know, are 6-inch collector figures, which are generally for the nostalgic 35 to 55 year old audience. You know, that is my specialty, you know, but I'm always, you know, wanting to get someone else into it, you know, and yeah. So hearing about that earlier generation that is very interested in buying a lot of the product, you know, and also I've heard story after story after story of, you know, kids legitimately under 13 that are getting every single G.I. Joe Classified Series figure that I'm like, that means so much to me, you know, because I don't only want to create, you know, the figure for the 35-year-old. I also want to be able to capture that audience because that is the future. You know, inevitably at some point, they're the ones that are going to be creating the toys, creating, you know, the next set of figures. And, you know, I want G.I. Joe to be able to live on with them as well, you know, as well as, you know, obviously Star Wars and Marvel and Street Sharks and, you know, everything else. It's like, you know, that's always important to me. And, you know, one of the greatest things of my career was when someone would come up to me and they're like, I was never into G.I. Joe. And then I got, you know, a couple classified series figures and now I'm obsessed. That it's like, that was always the greatest compliment I could get, because, you know, that means that, you know, they're not just buying it because they'll buy anything with G.I. Joe on it. You know, they're buying it because they love the product that we created. And, you know, so that always meant a lot to me when I would hear it, which luckily enough was fairly frequently.
That's awesome. I mean, I guess we've had that conversation between us where it's like, I was not into 6-inch until classified G.I. Joe.
Right.
And I do keep mine mostly to like G.I. Joe and Black Series, but I've now dabbled outside of that a bit, but it is genuinely because of classified.
That's cool. Thanks.
Screw you for making it nice. I want to go back to PowerCon next year.
Yes.
I don't know what the dates are. I heard somebody say they were going to change the dates, and then somebody else said it was going to be the exact same weekend. Depending on when it is, depends on whether or not I can bring Alexander or if Todd, who I normally travel with, if he'll come. But this is a show that, knowing as few people as I do at the show, I still felt like I was at home. Part of that, yes, is because the people I knew there, like you, I'm close with and I can spend hours with without looking for the fire escape. But the other part of that is that I am surrounded by the thing that I love. Toys, cartoons, comic books, role-playing games, video games. I struggle to remember important things, but these are the worlds that I retain. Most of, you know, my brain is consumed with. And so to be surrounded by, and maybe this is part of, I'm so deep in the G.I. Joe specific world because it is my main love, that I miss certain things. So, for example, and this is a great thing you could probably speak to, is from my perspective, 6-inch has been around for a while, but the 6-inch boom, the 6-inch takeover is about as old as classified. Now, maybe that's because I'm only looking at it through the eyes of G.I. Joe, and I know it is much older than that, but it feels like, from my perspective, that as classified was announced, and then it started to come out, there was less and less 4-inch of everything on the shelves. And I don't know if that G.I. Joe is just part of that larger boom, and that's why I've seen it, or if the ramp up to the boom happened at the same time that G.I. Joe decided to get involved.
Yes. So from my perspective, you know, obviously Marvel Legends is the line to like start at 6-inch.
And they're like 20 years old now, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I believe it was 2002, 2003 when the Toy Biz did Wave 1 or the Spider-Man Classics line. So that has been ongoing since then. But there was that time period, particularly when Hasbro got the Marvel Legends line and the 6-inch figures kind of disappeared. Then there was some here and there, but really it all switched over to the 4-inch Marvel figures. That was really big for them. And then there was pretty distinct kind of end of the 4-inch line when 6-inch was blowing up. And that was sort of right before Black Series. And I would actually say once Star Wars converted over to 6-inch, that was really when everyone in the industry jumped on it.
And that's why I prefaced it as in, I noticed it because of G.I. Joe, but I'm probably not correct. And so
you
have a deeper understanding for multiple of reasons.
And, you know, at least that was my perspective. Star Wars had been 3¾-inch for 40 years, you know, and then, you know, once it started doing the Black Series 6-inch figures, you know, it really, like I say, from my perspective, that was when a lot of the other companies really started catching on to be like, oh, that's where the majority of the fan base is. Now, there's a lot of debate to that.
Of course.
Because a lot of people essentially say that the 6-inch figures are for the casual collectors. the vintage the vintage collection, 3¾ figures. You know, that's really where the hardcore collectors are. You know, at some point, does it even matter? Because they both sell, you know, and when it comes down to it, from my knowledge, the 6-inch figures do sell more, but they don't necessarily go as deep character wise as the 3¾ line. You know, so there's always sort of that back and forth. And actually, I was talking to Mark and Ben of Skeletron, and, you know, we asked them, like, they're doing O-ring, 4-inch, and 6-inch. And so we asked them which one rose to the top. And for them, O-ring was like pretty well and above the other two. And then the other two were fairly neck and neck.
There's a ton of G.I. Joe people that only collect O-ring. Don't even collect the 4-inch because it's not O-ring. So, I mean, I get that. And then also 6-inch brought a lot of O-ring people to the modern market.
Yep. And so I would say that O-ring, it was probably, you know, one of the higher sellers for them because the market is smaller, but the demand is higher. There's fewer people that are hungry for O-ring figures. And so once they get some out there, they're like, yes, give me that, give me that, give me that. You know, meanwhile, a 6-inch collector, the world is their oyster right now. And so they may look at what Skeletron's doing and, oh, okay, I'll buy one or, you know, two here or there, you know, but they also have obviously classified series, you know, wrestling figures, Star Wars, Marvel, you know, and it's a very long list. And so I feel like the amount of collectors for 6-inch is bigger, but because they have more options, it then limits what they can do. And then 4-inch, I feel, lands kind of right in the middle. You know, there's some options for 4-inch, but not a ton. And so there are the people out there that are like, you know, 4-inch is everything I'm looking for. And so it's sort of right in there. Yeah, so that's kind of how I perceive everything. But, you know, obviously right now, yeah, I mean, 6-inch figures is the majority of the industry. 6-inch figures has been my preferred scale since Marvel Legends in 2002. So that has been where I'm at.
Joel, who is normally on here but is working while you and I are recording, he is 4-inch exclusively. He won't touch O-ring. His very few steps into O-ring, he was like, it's too fragile. I can't afford cost for how fragile this is. Whereas I'm handing it to, at the time that he got into it, I'm handing it to a 4-year-old. He's, you
know, yep.
Our experiences are a little different. But I love the modern 4-inch. I think it's beautiful. I love the customizability of it and everything. But from a money perspective, it was nice not to have to chase both scales.
Yes.
And so when 6-inch came out, I was just excited that Joe was back. And the first couple Joes, I was like, holy shit, like this Snake Eyes is incredible.
Thank you.
You know, he can stand on one hand. this is nuts. So then I'm buying a couple, like, I'm just going to pick and choose some Black Series 6-inch that I want. You know, and then legitimately with the His Tank, I was like, all right, I don't need to troop build 5 of every 6-inch figure. Let's just do 3. Because, you know, you still got a troop build.
Yep.
But now, because of that, as I'm walking around PowerCon, I'm like, I have from day one loved what Jason's doing, but I have avoided Animal Warriors of the Kingdom because I could not my scale it. But now I'm like, but, you know, I have a few hundred 6-inch and this monkey ass dude with this ape ass dude and this cheetah. And I'm like, oh, my God, get me away from this table. And so then I turn the corner and I'm staring at Cosmic Legions, which, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then I walk over and I'm like, OK, NECA is not really my thing, but I love the breadth of it. And I'm like, I'm not tempted by NECA. And I walk around the glass case and I see the gargoyles. And I went, oh, shit, well, that's kind of my thing. I went from no to, oh, well, I have the same problem with comic books, right? I've read comic books my whole life. I'm no longer into superheroes. Have you read the superhero comic? So I got to get all the superhero stuff again.
Yep.
I have the same problem with animation. I get frustrated in conversations where people are like, do you like anime? Oh, I love animation. Yeah, but what about anime? And I was like, all animation. And so I have this problem with toys of, I can tell you what's not my scale. I can tell you what I don't like, but you can give me one example that will completely change whatever I just... Don't hold me to shit in this toy world. I don't care what I told you last week. Whatever I'm telling you right now is true.
That's exactly.
And I'm having problems with that. I'm walking over there and I'm like, I'm not really into Super 7, but then I'm staring at their glass case of all the dumb, wonky shit that they're putting in that box. And I'm like, well, okay, talk to me, daddy. I just, and I'm standing there next to that cat's lair that is Jesus Christ big.
It is an impressive piece.
And I have a buddy from Florida who's way into Thundercats. And he got the Thunder tank and he's calling me. He's like, how big is it? And I was like, it is 60% of your dining room table. That's a scale.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. I knew that it was big.
Yes.
Obviously. You know, I've seen the measurements. I've seen people stand by it. And then you see it in person and it's just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, it's enormous and it's gorgeous and it's so well done. It's
absolutely.
You know, and like I do not collect Thundercats. I am not nostalgic for Thundercats. I have no connection to it growing up.
But if you had a place for that.
You know, yeah, it's just like, you know, it is a gorgeous piece of toy art that it's like, I've never seen anything that big, that impressive. But also, yeah, I have nowhere to put it. So, you know, unfortunately, I had to draw the line. I'm not going to be getting that, you know, but... Man, it is incredible. For the people who do get it, like, they are going to be in love with it for sure.
And I think you need to be careful when you look at the pictures of that. So when you look at the pictures of that, it's so cartoon accurate that you're like, it's a little blocky. And then you see it in person, you're like, oh, this isn't blocky at all. Every flat surface has detail. And then you start looking at all the little tidbits that are hidden throughout. And the workshop and the alchemy lab and all the computer screens and the piping and the,
yep.
It is, and that, I think that goes back to sometimes like you got to see a toy in hand.
Yes.
That thing was breathtaking.
Yes.
The thing that I was hoping to see from Super 7 was wave 3 of their Disney stuff, because I have Prince John and I have Robin Hood and I need me a Little John. I was so very tempted by the Super Joe stuff. And not my thing, but then, like, I know Steve, I know his passion for it, and I see the figures, they're posed in little battles on this, I was like, oh my God, that was the fun of PowerCon. It's, aside from, you know, you could find any Motu, anything you want there, because all the vendors were very heavy, the Toy Expo side of it was, it also tells me that there is still room for other creatives that... have an idea that want to get something out there, you know, the next wave of indie companies, but also the next wave of sculptors, your peers, mm-hmm. painters, yeah. designers, all of these things.
Two of my favorite conversations were with, there were two vendors there that were, you know, small company creators. And the one, he had his own line. It was the Biblical Adventures line. And so he was creating that, but he is also essentially a liaison for small companies and Chinese factories. And so he works directly with the Four Horsemen of hooking them up with their factory, you know, and being sort of the middleman with that. And then there was another one, I believe it was Neo Geo Toys. It was like way on the end against the wall. And that was another one where their whole thing was, you know, if you want to be an independent creator, we can handle the business side. We can handle the production and factory connections. And so, you know, you just handle the creative, you know, and the sort of design and, you know, that side of things. Those connections are amazing to have at this type of event, because obviously, you know, independent creators need those things. But it immediately made me, as someone in the industry, go, oh, do I want to make my own thing? These are the connections that I need to make that happen.
You have one of the more expensive skill sets.
I do. Well, the side tangent to that, while I was at Hasbro, one of the things that I realized through my years there is you know, because I was so passionate about the production side of things, you know, I don't want to just make a pretty figure. I want to make a pretty figure that works. Being attached to that part of it and being able to actually make something tangible dawned on me that it's like being able to, you know, because I have an illustration background. I know how to design characters. I know how to do all those things, and being able to translate that into a physical thing is essentially the hang up that a lot of people have, particularly on the design side. Sculpture is, you know, the part of the business that everyone needs. That being said, you know, like, I really enjoy working with other people, you know, and, you know, the idea of being able to work with Jason on, you know, the AWOC figures, being able to work with Savage Crucible on what they're creating, you know, that's really exciting to me, you know, more so than creating my own thing from the ground up. And maybe that'll change, you know, but having those connections and having those people at the convention, you know, I would think and I hope that it makes, you know, just a toy enthusiast go, oh, maybe I can dip my toe into this. You know, someone who's not in the industry at all, Ben and Mark of Skeletron, you know, those types of connections are what, you know, those are the hard ones to connect. A lot of people have ideas for toys. A lot of people have fun designs. But until you have that connection of the manufacturing side, you know, it can't really go anywhere. But now that's becoming easier and easier for people to make those connections and to make those industry connections. I want to see more and more people get into it. You know, I want people to create new stuff.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.